Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. I am Bill Buckmaster along with Ray Allen. Ray is engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. When am I going to start be able to get out of these short sleeve shirts, Ray? I mean, is this going to be all winter wearing these short sleeve polos? It's almost Thanksgiving and we're talking about pushing nearly 90 degrees. Close to, if not a record high today in Tucson, but then things are going to get pretty cool by overnight Thursday. But we're going to talk about weather and climate with Zach Guido in a moment after I tell our listeners, of course, that you're listening to AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's Voice, on this November the 15th, the middle of November, on AM 1030 KVOI with live streaming at kvoi.com and on my website, buckmastershow.com. Dr. Zach Guido is a climate scientist with the University of Arizona Climate Assessment for the Southwest Group at the UA-based Institute for the Environment. He is also a regular guest on the Buckmaster Show. And Zach, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me again.
You had a great trip up to over to Mongolia. Then you were in Jamaica, and now you're back in very warm Tucson. You were sharing with me, I was thinking October was the warmest record on record here, but I guess it's the third warmest.
Yep, the data came in as the third warmest on record in 122 years, and that's for the entire, averaged over the entire state of Arizona. And the temperature difference was about five degrees Fahrenheit above average. So that's pretty substantial.
And November could very well be up there in the top five.
Yeah, it's looking like that. We haven't had the precipitation events yet that would help bring sort of cooler, moister conditions down from the northwest. So we've had this sort of big low pressure system that's been parked right off the Aleutians, and the Southwest has been under this ridge of high pressure that have really enabled the temperatures to rise and the lack of precipitation. So, we're still wearing short sleeve shirts, but hopefully that won't be the case.
Well, they're calling for 41 degrees, I believe, overnight on a Thursday, which would be probably the coolest, certainly the coolest temperatures of the year. Last winter was mild, fairly dry. I know that I didn't have to cover my sensitive vegetation maybe just a couple of times last winter. And with La Nina now kind of in place, we could see a similar winter this year, couldn't we?
We can, though the conditions are different. I mean, last year was really interesting in that we had a historically strong El Nino event. And that's when the sea surface temperatures in the tropical Pacific Ocean are above average, and that influences the winds, which influences the sea surface temperatures and has this sort of cascading effect on global climate. And usually, you know, the statistics and the weather patterns favor wetter conditions. Was not the case for us last year. And so while many of us expected wet weather and a little cooler conditions, we actually saw the reverse. The conditions this year favor a La Nina event, and that's the opposite. That's when temperatures in the Pacific Ocean are below average. It's a weak La Nina, but if you look at the historical patterns, the precipitation here in the Southwest tends to cluster around below average. So if you were betting, it's shaping up to be a better bet to make on dry conditions than on wet conditions.
La Nina last was around, these come around just every couple of years? Or?
Yeah, periodically it's sort of on this sort of quasi-periodic 3 to 7 year cycle. You're testing my knowledge here. I think 2000, I don't know if I want to go on record to say when the last La Nina was.
All right,
It's been a few years, yeah. 2012, I think.
Does intensity matter more with El Nino or La Nina?
Well, we thought that intensity mattered more with El Nino. And as you get a stronger condition, stronger temperature anomalies, you get stronger responses in the atmosphere, and then we would have wetter conditions. Now, there's a caveat to this, which is we just don't have a lot of numbers to look at. We don't have a lot of data. So most of our records only go back to about 1950. And so there's 20 to 25 of these events that we can look into. So intensity in those sort of small sample size has higher intensity, higher precipitation for El Nino events. It's not the case for La Nina events. In fact, most of the La Nina events tend to cluster around within similar values below average. So it's, I guess the upshot of that is it's more, we're more confident that you're going to have below average conditions in La Nina than we are above average conditions for El Nino.
And Ray has just brought up a graphic that will help us. The last week La Nina was 2011, the winter of 2011-2012.
Okay, great. So I was right.
Yeah, so it's just a couple of years there. The last moderate one was the prior year, 2010. Mm-hmm. But then when you look at La Nina, what a strong La Nina. It's been a long time. 1988-89 as far as a very strong La Nina.
That's right. And I mean, if you just go back to last year for El Nino, we had a very strong El Nino, but we had back-to-back El Nino conditions. So we've been in this sort of cycle where we've had more El Ninos than La Ninas. So we'll have to see how the winter plays out. It's certainly favoring right now drier than average conditions. But, you know, if we learned anything from last year, there are chances that it will be opposite. And we should also say that within that sort of seasonal situation, we are going to have weather. Weather will be superimposed on that. And we will have storms moving in from the Pacific Northwest that bring cold and soppy weather. And so we should expect that there will be wet conditions periodically.
California is still in a major drought. Yes, there was some good rain in the northern part of California, but three quarters of California, Zach Guido, remain in a pretty severe drought, mostly in the central agricultural belt in Southern California. And Arizona still has some pockets of drought too, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, California, it takes a while to get out of a drought, particularly when you have sequential years of below average conditions. And that's what happened in California. And it's going to take, particularly for Southern California and Central California, another good winter to sort of ease concerns there. It's the same case for Arizona. You know, it's just easier to be dry here in the Southwest than it is to be wet. And, you know, our sort of water supply situation bears that out. We've been in this sort of trickling lower levels in the reservoirs, and we're still at pretty low conditions for pretty low levels for many of the reservoirs. You know, we're sort of still hovering around the 1075 elevation in Lake Mead that triggers shortages. And, you know, the reservoirs in New Mexico, Elephant Butte Reservoir, for example, is like 6% full. So we need a couple back-to-back years of solid winter precipitation.
One thing that could help with La Nina, the winters in the northern Rockies could be wetter. La Nina can mean wetter conditions in the northern Rockies. Up in the Seattle area, Pacific Northwest could get some good rain too.
That's right. So that's the sort of iconic pattern: dry in the Southwest, wet in the Northwest. And the sort of hinge line between having a sort of statistically significant El Nino or La Nina signal is in the sort of Colorado area. So it's hard to use this predictor of La Nina to say much about the upper Colorado River Basin. But as you move north, there tends to be a wet signal for La Nina conditions and a dry signal to the south.
All right, Zach Guido, thank you very much, Zach. One of our fine sponsors is Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Of course, the Gila National Wilderness, just such a beautiful area. And they had a pretty good monsoon over there, so things really greened up nice over there.
Yeah, that monsoon was great.
Yeah. So it was this considered an average monsoon or?
No, I think if you look at it on the whole, particularly here in the southeastern part of the state, it was a pretty good El Nino. Monsoon.
Monsoon.
It was above average. Now, the monsoon's hard to talk about because you're going to have pockets.
Oh, yeah.
it's pretty variable spatially. So, but by and large, I'd say it was a good monsoon.
It's a great time of year to go over to Silver City. It's only 3 hours east of Tucson. Southwest New Mexico is their fine website.org. SouthwestNewMexico.org. There's several dozen great places to stay in Silver City, and they've got the full listing of the many things to do, including visiting the Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument, which is just north of downtown historic Silver City. So it's a great weekend outing, about 3 hours east of Tucson. Check it out. They've been a great sponsor for the Buckmaster Show. Again, Zach, thanks. Good luck and your travels ahead. Thanks a lot. Have a great winter.
Thanks for having me.
All right.
I'm Dr. Kevin Lehman. I've got one wife, 5 kids, 2 grandchildren, and cockroaches. You know what I did? Smartest call I ever made in my life. I called my friend Shelby Hawkins at 5-Star Termite and Pest Control. I was introduced to a guy named Joey. He'd been my technician for 11 years. A great job. Guess what? No more cucarachas.
New 5-Star Pest Control. We know what bugs you.
This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport with 6 airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Hi, this is Sean McCluskey, co-owner and designated broker for Rincon Ventures. If you're a rental owner by choice or by accident, and you're looking to hire or change property management companies, consider Rincon Ventures. We employ an aggressive web-based advertising strategy to market your rental. We thoroughly screen prospective tenants and conduct routine property inspections. Our online system gives tenants the ability to pay rent and file maintenance requests instantly over the web. Our owners can use the same system to instantly check on their properties. Call Rincon Ventures at 881-2258 or visit us on the web at rvprop.com.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover 2 of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soup, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Shelly Fishman is a certified financial planner professional. The opinions voiced in this program segment are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing.
Well, we consult with Shelly Fishman, certified financial planner, at this time, just about exactly at this time, every Tuesday, and we call it our Tuesday Money Maker Report. And Shelly, first of all, Good to see your smiling face.
Good to see you, Bill. I brought my crystal ball with me. Every time I turn it, it gives me a different answer.
Yeah. So people have made some money. In the name of our segment, Money Maker. Well, when it first looked like Donald J. Trump would be the next president of the United States, my goodness, the futures market like dropped through into the basement. But then by the time the market opened, people were thinking positively.
Well, and that's what's been going on all week, really, is that the market's been reacting to the last thing they heard.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows exactly what's going to happen. Nobody knows the time frames. Nobody knows who all the people are going to be. And nobody knows what the rest of the world is going to do in reaction to whatever it is we do. As a result, it is very difficult to really make intelligent decisions about how or if you react to where this presidency might take us from a market and an investment perspective. And I'd like to keep my comments kind of limited to a market and an investment perspective.
Of course.
Because what we have is the kind of uncertainty that markets normally hate.
Mm-hmm.
However, we do know enough about what Mr. Trump and his campaign have said that they'd like to do in terms of their short-term priorities,
mm-hmm.
to perhaps make some decisions about some tweaking or some fine-tuning in a portfolio. So if you think there's going to be tariffs imposed or something like a trade war or at least some effort to bring manufacturing back to the United States, that would lead you to believe that there would be implications in the developing world around those kinds of actions by the United States. So in my client portfolios, to the extent that we still have emerging market
exposure
in the portfolios, we're lightening up on that.
Mm-hmm.
To the extent that we believe that almost anything that we do in terms of cutting taxes and spending more money on infrastructure will have the effect of raising interest rates and raising inflation, then we need to make sure that we are exposed to the kinds of investments that do well during inflationary times. Also, we know that if we do start actually building infrastructure, to the extent that we can find shovel-ready projects in the short term, those will require that there be construction materials and equipment, heavy equipment, that type of thing. And so we've seen run-ups in Caterpillar and those kinds of stocks. But also cement, steel, paving materials, that kind of thing, could do very well in the shorter term. The issue with bringing manufacturing back is harder to really kind of put your finger on. What we know is that before the election, we had close to $1 trillion in corporate assets sitting on the sidelines because managers could not forecast with any degree of certainty an increase in demand for products. So what people were doing in the manufacturing sectors and to some extent in the service sectors as well, instead of putting on new capacity, they were simply squeezing tighter and tighter on worker efficiencies and other efficiencies, going more into robotics and the things that would help them avoid making major commitments in capital. Now, if I'm going to build a factory, Bill,
mm-hmm.
I've got, as a matter of corporate policy, what's called a hurdle rate. In other words, that project has to look like it's going to make a certain amount of money in a certain period of time. And part of hurdle rate is also a period of time. So if I'm building something, I need to have a return on that investment in, say, a 6 or 7 or 8 year period. And we also know that it takes a little bit of time to build a factory. So let's say I think that the United States is going to take a more defensive posture on trade, that we think that prices might go up 20 or 30% in those areas where we would impose import tariffs. And so then I do the math, and you know, you have your finance guy and the marketing guys get together and figure out what the possible results of building some new plant might be, and you decide to move ahead with that project. But that project is probably, you know, a year or two or 3 years away from getting completed, and it assumes very high levels of price increases over what we have today. And so we could see interest rates go back to more normative levels of 5 and 6% for corporate bonds, maybe 7 or 8%. We could see short-term treasuries go up to maybe 2 or 3%, and medium-term treasuries yielding in the maybe 4% range. The rest of the bond market takes its cue from treasuries. So, you know, if medium-term 10 to 20-year treasuries are hitting 4%, then you could see the bond market in there at a point or two higher than that. If the longer-term treasuries are hitting 4 or 5%, maybe 5.5%, you could see high yield and longer-term issues, you know, up around 7 or 8%. That is going to cause the total yields in terms of dividends in bonds, but also in bond funds to move up. But the price of those funds in the short term could go down. And that's kind of what we're seeing in the bond market. Now, today is the exception. Today, things kind of reversed a bit. So I'm talking a bunch. If you can make any sense out of what I'm saying, it's that we're in uncharted territory. We can take a look into the short-term future and predict some good things for the economy because of stimulus and because, stimulus comes in two flavors, tax cuts and infrastructure spending. Longer term, we have a bigger problem, and that's the effect of those things on interest rates and on the deficit.
But we may have a short term between now and the end of the year. This year could look pretty good.
Yeah, and we said that last week, that so far it looks very, very good. Uh-huh. We're up, you know, 10, 11, 12%.
Which is beyond,
beyond what we predicted, absolutely.
Yeah. Your prediction had been in the six to seven percent,
maybe 4 to 6% for the Dow, but that was before the election,
right?
And now we have a lot of enthusiasm in certain sectors,
yes,
around this idea that we could get a stimulus that the Obama administration was not able to push through, mm-hmm, after its first few months, mm-hmm, and that could result in spending, which would bleed through the economy and create more demand.
So the portfolio numbers, the percentage-wise, could look pretty darn good
at
the end of this year.
They absolutely could. I worry a little bit about the bond market because people will become concerned as they see their bond,
right,
fund
the bond
portfolio
funds
shrink. But again, longer term, if interest rates go up and bond yields go up as a result, those will do just fine.
But bonds seem to be back to, at least today anyway, acting
last couple of weeks
a bit more normal,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, last couple of weeks we've seen stocks go up, bonds go down,
yeah,
bonds go up, stocks go down. And
which
and
is the way
the seesaw supposed to work.
Supposed to work.
Hasn't worked that way in a decade and a half.
Yeah. So your message has been to investors.
My message to investors is, you know, first thing, my prime job as an advisor is to make sure my clients don't do crazy things.
Okay.
Make sure that they don't chase the curve. Remember, we've got a stock market average over the past, 40, 50, 60 years, 11, 12%. The average portfolio makes 3%. The reason for that is people react to greed and fear, and they're chasing the curve. They're buying high and selling low instead of the reverse. So my primary job is to make sure my clients don't do that. That said, if you can not try to time things down to the minute or the day or even the week,
market
but if
timing,
you can take a look at trends that you think are likely to happen. You can make some fine-tuning adjustments in people's portfolio that might lighten up in more dangerous or unpredictable areas of portfolio and add a little bit of risk in areas that are likely to benefit from less regulation, in the, at least the short term, by which I mean 2 or 3 years, less regulation, more construction and lower taxes, especially lower taxes for people who theoretically will be investing that money, not necessarily spending it.
All right. Buckle up. Put your seatbelt on. It could be a crazy, wild ride. And Shelley Fishman, thank you very much. Shelley, certified financial planner. And you can find out more about Shelley, and we urge you to do so by going to buckmastershow.com, and that will link you up with Shelley, and he will return your phone call in a very timely manner. Thank you, Shelley. Have a great week.
You too.
Thanks a lot. See you now.
The opinions voiced in this program segment are for general information only and are not necessarily those of LPL Financial or this station. Shelley Fishman, CFP, is an LPL Financial Planner. Shelley can be reached at 520-940-0884 or at his website, shelleyfishman.com. Securities offered through LPL Financial. Member FINRA, SIPC.
The Regional Transportation Authority funds new sidewalks, pedestrian crossings, and bike lanes across the region to enhance our regional mobility and safety. The RTA's 20-year plan also includes roadway improvement projects and expanded transit services to provide added convenience and accessibility. The RTA continues to deliver its promise to you to make our region a better place to live, work, and play. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com. Business owners and managers upgrade your workforce through training customized to meet your needs. Pima Community College offers affordable, specialized training for companies large and small. Instruction is delivered how, when, and where you want it, whether online, at your business, or a customized combination. Pima Community College instructors make training relevant with a focus on today's real-world business needs and measurable success. Learn more at 206-6593, 206-6593. If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting from a different perspective. We have an entire section devoted to the Old West and its heritage. Contributors include Wyatt Earp historian Scott Dyke and hiking Apacheria's Jerry Egan. We also look back at Old West newspapers and feature a column, This Day in Old West History. It is Old West News from a different perspective. The Southern Arizona News Examiner. Free subscriptions at soaznewsx.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org and remember to always start with trust.
This is Bill Buckmaster, coming up Wednesday at noon on the Buckmaster Show. We have a newsmaker interview planned with Dr. H.T. Sanchez. Dr. Sanchez is superintendent of the Tucson Unified School District. How will a new board member change the governing dynamic of the state's second largest school district? Buckmaster on AM 1030, KVOI, The Voice. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Well, 34 on the Buckmaster Show on KVOI AM 1030, and just as importantly, live streaming at KVOI.com and at BuckmasterShow.com. And if you want to follow what we're doing on the show, become a friend of ours on Facebook. Just push through a milestone today, 4,900 friends. That means there's a room for about 100 more. So if you'd like to join us, just go to my Facebook page, Bill Buckmaster. Dr. David Levy is the Buckmaster Show contributor on science, the former science editor of Parade magazine. He and his lovely wife, Wendy, a few years ago, founded the Sharing the Sky Science Educational Organization. Dr. David Levy is one of the most successful comet discoverers in history. He has 23 notches on his belt. That means 23 comets, including his co-discovery of Shoemaker-Levy 9, the comet that collided with Jupiter in 1994, producing the most spectacular explosions ever witnessed in the solar system. Let's welcome him now to the Buckmaster Show from his Vail, Arizona Observatory, David Levy. How are you, Dr. Levy?
Hello, Dr. Buckmaster. Great to hear your voice today.
Well, the election's over, and one nice thing about looking skyward, it's a very nonpartisan event usually, right? The sky has no favorites.
The sky has no favorites, and it's actually kind of as I was watching that super-duper moon last night,
yeah,
noting that you really can't tell the difference between it and any ordinary full moon, it seems to me that it does bring a little bit of a sense of peace.
I think
to,
so.
The changing and unfortunate situation of what happens here on the planet Earth.
Well, that's a wonderful perspective, you know. And by the way, I kind of agree with you about the full moon. Yes, very bright, but maybe a little hype there is involved with this one.
And while we're talking about it, one of the things that they kept on saying is that you have to see it at moonrise or at moonset. Otherwise, you don't really notice it. And the reason is not because of the super-duper moon, but because of something called the moon illusion. Whenever the moon is near the horizon, it appears bigger. And that's because you can compare it to terrestrial features. When it's high in the sky, you cannot, so it looks smaller.
Huh.
And so that really has nothing to do with the super-duper moon.
Well, so the best time would be to check it out as it's rising or setting, right?
Yes, and do you approve of incoming President-elect Donald Trump's proposal to outlaw the super-duper moon?
No political comments today, no.
Let's talk about
your forthcoming autobiography.
Yes, it's called A Night Watchman's Journey. I've been working on it for about 5 years, and Wendy isn't going through every comma, space, period, and I've been trying very hard to fix it. And what happens when I'm about almost finished fixing it, my computer drive breaks, and I'm set back about 3 weeks. And so I've now gone through the book about 3 times, finally got it set and backed it up, and I'm finally up to date with it. So I'm hoping it'll come out in the year 2018.
And again, the title will be?
A Night Watchman's Journey.
And the significance of that, please.
The significance of that is the journey of my life, of the adventures of a stargazer, someone who lives his life underneath the night sky.
Yeah, a lot of your life has been under the night sky. And an anniversary of the comet search.
Yes, it is. 50 years ago, on December the 17th, 1965, I I started my search for comets. Last December, I passed 50 years, and this December, next month, I will pass 51 years. I'm still doing it, but Bill, I'm slowing down a bit because I'm getting older.
Really?
And my energy isn't quite what it used to be. And also, more important than my energy level is that I'm finding that it's virtually impossible for an amateur astronomer to discover a comet anymore.
Why is that?
Which is really kind of a scary thing, and that's because partly is my own fault as a result of SL9, the comet that collided with Jupiter. Big pushes happened in recent decades to get automated search programs going to discover all the comets, and that really doesn't leave a place for amateurs like me to find them. I'm still looking, though, Bill.
Huh. So the automated systems are kind of taking over.
They are definitely taking over.
Hmm.
And you don't want me to say this, but the Republicans are going to outlaw comet hunting.
No.
They're all going to be arrested.
No, David. How about the meteor showers in November? You've got the very famous one coming up. Well, actually, they're both famous, November and December.
Yeah, the Leonids are coming up in November if they're not outlawed. And the Geminids, okay, I'll stop saying that. The Geminids are the big shower coming up in December. The problem is with both meteor showers is that they will take place around the full moon. The Leonids are coming up in 2 days. And the Geminids are coming up on the night of the next full moon. It's going to be very hard to see any but the brightest ones. Next year, the meteor showers will be much better, and they'll be taking place around new moon. They'll be a lot easier to see around Tucson.
2017 will bring a full solar eclipse in North America.
Yes, there
correct?
Is. In fact, Wendy and I are going to be in Madras, Oregon.
Hmm.
On August the 21st of 2017, where we hope to see a total eclipse of the sun.
The path of totality is pretty much northwestern United States?
It starts in the northwestern. It crosses the country. Kansas City, former World Series champion place, is going to be right near the path, and then it goes down into Tennessee or something at the end of the day. So it crosses the United States, the first one to do so since 1979.
All right. How about the quote of the month from David Levy?
Bill, I'm looking at a picture of Comet Kozak-Peltier taken in 1939, and one like it was given to me when I was visiting the Moudon Observatory in 1986. My quote this month is related to that. It's Leslie Peltier, who discovered Comet Kozak-Peltier in 1939, and he writes about Halley's Comet, about how on an early trip it witnessed the defeat of Attila's Huns, and in 1456 the midday Angelus was declared by Pope Calixtus in the wake of Halley's Comet, and 1835 many a canal boat traveler could see the comet glowing on the surface of his highway in 1986, we did indeed visit the comet in turn. The way it ends is kind of prescient to me. Who would venture to foretell the wonders and achievements which the comet will witness in that distant year of 2062? Or will man himself prove periodic? Will the Huns be back again?
All right. David Levy, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Bill. Speak to you next month.
Thanks a lot. David Levy, Dr. David Levy, who has discovered 23 comets, and it would be nice if he could get that 24th, so we could say the discoverer of an even two dozen. Green Things, thank you, Jan and Jack, the owners of Green Things. They do a terrific job. They took the original property, it took 4 acres, then they expanded to 13, and they've got 33 greenhouses full of plants. They've got pottery, gardening supplies. They do their Saturday and Sunday free workshops, 10 a.m. I suggest you go to greenthingsaz.com. Green Things is located at 3384 East River Road, just west of the intersection of Dodge and River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Check out Green Things. Be right back. We'll be right back.
Sadly, animal abandonment and neglect happen to millions of animals every day. The Humane Society of Southern Arizona sees these cases all the time, and we want to save as many of these forgotten animals as we possibly can. Your support helps us help animals like Bobby, Elise, Jackie, and Mickey get the care and love they deserve. Please give to the forgotten and show them someone cares. Visit hssaz.org/forgottenfund to make your gift now.
This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in TUS. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. Business owners and managers upgrade your workforce through training customized to meet your needs. Pima Community College offers affordable, specialized training for companies large and small. Instruction is delivered how, when, and where you want it, whether online, at your business, or a customized combination. Pima Community College instructors make training relevant with a focus on today's real-world business needs and measurable success. Learn more at 206-6593, 206-6593. This year, the Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 10 years of delivering projects across our region. More than 755 multimodal projects help you reach your destinations. By delivering both mobility and economic benefits to communities throughout Pima County, the RTA unquestionably makes a difference in our region. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Experience the best of the Canadian Rocky Mountains with the rail journey on Rocky Mountaineer. You'll travel alongside the powerful Kicking Horse River and pass by monumental landmarks from the early days of the National Railway. On this legendary route, you'll see postcard images around each bend, including stays in picturesque Lake Louise, with scenic tours of Jasper National Park, and much more. Contact Bon Voyage Travel to plan your Rocky Mountaineer rail journey today. Bon Voyage Travel, your travel experts.
The excitement is building for the grand opening in early 2017 for the Twisted Tandoor. The legendary Indian food truck will now have a permanent brick-and-mortar home at Swan and Camp Lowell Drive. The menu will be an expansion of the Indian classic offerings from the original Twisted Tandoor food truck. The Twisted Tandoor, coming in early 2017 at 4660 East Camp Lowell Drive. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice. And again, we are live streaming. That means worldwide live listening through the website at kvoi.com and through my website, buckmastershow.com. Let's go up now to ASU and Tempe, to the ASU Center for Violence Prevention and Community Safety. The associate director there is Dr. David Choate, and he joins us now on the live line. Dr. Choate, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
This study that came out, it's very troubling, about Arizona seniors. It's really the first report, I believe, from the Arizona Violent Death Reporting System showing a high rate of suicide among older Arizonans. What kind of numbers are we talking about?
Well, in terms of raw numbers, it's not something we can kind of openly discuss because there are going to be some of those communities that have a low number, and especially as we start to subdivide. And we don't want to run the risk of identifying any folks. What it does tell us as we kind of normalize to the rates is that there's a good deal of concern there compared to the subpopulation of older adults in Arizona to the general population.
Well, and why seniors are they especially vulnerable?
Wow, that's a great question. It's not uncommon across the nation. I think most folks will typically think of, if you try to imagine picturing a suicide victim, you think of a teenager. And the reality is nationally, older adults generally see problems with high suicide rates as well. Then unfold a more pronounced problem for Arizona because of our higher than national average retiree-aged population. The why is an interesting question, and one that, tied to the project this data is coming out of, it's a CDC-funded program that we're the bona fide agent for the state of Arizona, integrating death certificate medical examiner, like autopsy, toxicology reports, and then the law enforcement, the responsible jurisdiction, their investigative report, and kind of merging these existing data sources together to really start to peel apart the question of why, the characteristics and circumstances that contribute to it. We're in early stages of data collection. We've got about 18 months worth. And so making reliable and valid assumptions about that is still a little early, but we have the mechanisms in place that we're really going to be able to start to dig a little deeper into that question.
Let's hit pause here for a moment. What is the ASU Center for Violence Prevention and Community Service, Dr. Choate?
So it's a research shop within the School of Public Service and Community Solutions, and closely tied, as it might seem kind of curious for suicides, but we're closely tied with the School of Criminology and Criminal Justice. The center itself, everything we engage in is, for use of a cliche word, is use-inspired research. Not research for the sake of it, but research that can be actionable, and working with community partners and professional practitioners in the field.
Talk about the veterans. This is also another troubling part of the report, that veterans have a really much higher rate of suicide, don't they?
They do. They do. And there's been a lot of discussion and some work in this area, over the summer, kind of catching wind of national averages of about 22 veteran suicides per day. And Arizona's rate outpaces that a little bit. So just looking at if we were thinking of a state-by-state contribution, Arizona contributes to that a little bit disproportionately. And veterans overall are are about 3.5 times as likely to commit suicide as other Arizonans.
Just from your most recent report, you're saying that comparing violent death rates among veterans and non-veterans in Arizona reveals a substantial and significant difference in suicide rates per 100,000 population. Specifically, the suicide rate among non-veterans was around 22% per 100,000 of the population, compared then to about 75% of 100,000 among the veterans in Arizona. That's pretty dramatic, isn't it, Dr. Choate?
It is. It is. It's a substantial difference. So we'll use that language, right? It's statistically significant, so we know that there is a genuine difference. It's not by chance alone, but that's also a pretty substantial number. There's a great deal of concern with that.
How about the concern over divorced people, seniors that are divorced, and especially men over 85 have a higher suicide rate?
Yes, I mean, that's certainly of concern as well. I mean, we can think of different life change events that are going to be contributing factors, and divorce is one of those things. As we move forward, we're going to start to be able to look at those more carefully, and other critical life-changing events. Other states in the national system have seen, in other populations, other age group populations, where job loss or foreclosure over a home have contributed to some of these numbers as well. And as we collect more data, we'll be able to start to answer that better. With the real purpose, I keep saying that, but the real purpose is that as we're able to better identify those characteristics and circumstances, as well as perhaps some of the geography, particular communities across the state that might be at greater risk, so that we can better direct resources to those subpopulations, to those areas of the state geographically perhaps, or provide better messaging in the intervention and prevention efforts.
And again, you said that Arizona, I believe, is one of 40 states that are participating in the Center for Disease Control and Prevention's National Violent Death Reporting System. So it sounds like you're saying, Dr. Choate, this is kind of a first step to gather this analysis of the violent death data so that we can then move forward to the all-important, and answering the all-important question, how do we prevent this from happening, correct?
Correct. Because that is the point of it, is to do something with the information we learn. Because these are obviously, you know, serious concerns. And one of the advantages of the system is that it uses existing, you know, data collection resources. We collect vital records on, you know, through death certificates, and medical examiners and law enforcement agencies do the job they're intended to do to investigate a homicide, for example. But for lack of a better description, they're largely case management tools, right? They're intended for that particular case and don't automatically build into a system that aggregates and to do trend analyses and do some of these more in-depth things. And that's one of the advantages of this system, is it minimizes the resource effort in order to integrate this information to provide better surveillance data, if you will, to inform those prevention and intervention efforts.
Is it difficult gathering this information? Let's face it, suicide is probably something that not a lot of people want to talk about, correct, Dr. Choate?
Correct. Yeah, so it requires a lot of things, because one of the first concerns is, so we are using official data. We would never contact surviving family members of the decedents and things like that. So it is using official record information, but it still is very sensitive information about these individuals. And that's of always great concern to us, you know, to make sure we continue to protect the individual anonymity while still being able to kind of inform for future effort. It certainly is a difficult balance, and we depend on the trust and cooperation of terrific partners with the medical examiner's offices, with sheriffs and police departments across the state. There's a lot of coordination, yes.
And isolation is I would think a factor in all this. Many of the older people perhaps have lost a spouse of many years, and they do feel isolated and in many cases hopeless. So hopefully out of this we'll be able to try to help some of those people. Would you agree with that, Dr. Choate?
Absolutely. You know, it's been part of the discussions we've had in a variety of ways. And it's too early to really have it as a definitive answer, but switching gears from your question on the older adults, but in the veterans, looking at the breakdowns by county, and I'm hesitant to say this. The statistician in me tells me I shouldn't speculate, but those counties where we have our military bases, right? So Fort Huachuca, Luke, Davis-Monthan, and the Marine Air Corps Station in Yuma, those counties have less than the statewide average rate in veteran suicides.
Huh.
And so talking about the isolation, it may be the community of veterans,
right,
and
right,
the active military, the larger community that provides some insulation and protective factor for those folks,
okay,
differently than particularly our rural counties without those sources.
Dr. David Choate at ASU Center for Violence Prevention and Community Safety. Thank you, Dr. Choate, for spending some time with us.
Glad to help.
Thanks a lot. All right, coming up this afternoon, Mic Check with Mike Shaw and Ray Allen at 4 to 5. Then we do 4 hours of local talk, Wake Up Tucson from 6 to 9, and then Talking Culture from 9 to 10. And then me, Bill Buckmaster, back with Ray Allen at noon, 12:04 tomorrow. Have a great afternoon and evening.